know, when a group like this get together, they like to sing, and I don't want to keep from singing under these circumstances. Well, again, what a joy to be with all of you, to not only speak to you, but to speak with you during this little brief interlude, and we'll hope to have more opportunity for that after this is over. Just what is it that elders do? I've had that asked sometime, especially in the church that doesn't have elders, never had elders. In fact, Lee said, for a long time, I'd never even seen an elder. What did one look like? And rather interesting, a time or two when an elder has gone to Nigeria or some Western country, they just make a big thing. This is an elder. Maybe this is a good time to say that an elder is no greater after he's appointed than he was before he was appointed. He's just given a new job. The thing Jesus was teaching, I'm off the track here already, is the thing that Jesus was teaching when James and John wanted to be made great in the kingdom, was that you don't make people great by giving them an appointment of some kind. If they're great, they're great because they have developed the qualities that a Christian has. They become more and more like the king. And a good woman who has become more like the king than any man in the congregation is greater in the kingdom than an elder is, who is not as nearly the king, as much like the king. That's what makes greatness. But there are jobs to do. And there are works that evangelists do. There are works that deacons do. There are works that elders do. They've just been assigned those works, those responsibilities. That doesn't make them great. Greatness depends on character and dedication to doing the work that a person's been given to do. So a man no greater in the kingdom the day after he's appointed an elder than he was the day before. We just need to keep that clear in mind. It's not some exalted office that makes a man great. It's his character. But in the previous lesson, we saw that elders are both overseers and shepherds. Overseer, and I keep coming back to this, and I put the word may. I'm not sure this always holds, but it seems to me the word overseer emphasizes his responsibility over the group, whereas the word shepherd emphasizes his responsibility to each sheep. But they overlap because a shepherd is the overseer of the flock. We understand that as well. Jesus is the example of both. Jesus, for you were like sheep going astray, but now you return to the overseer of your soul. Jesus is the chief shepherd, but he's also the overseer. There's some things that elders did in the Old Testament. They served as judges of murderers. They conducted inquests. They heard family problems, settled matrimonial disputes, settled questions of personal rights, and served as witnesses. I'm not sure that's all that important, except just to see what elders did in the Old Testament. And I think we would expect something similar to be true of elders in this particular time, in the New Testament time. They'd be doing all those things, I think. But I'm going to go ahead and say that Tim Broadwell's dad, I think, made this list. I never would have come up with it. But he serves as an outstanding elder, in my judgment. And he, from his own experience, I think, came up with this rather lengthy list, and I'll get it. There's more to it, and we'll put some more screens on here. But when you think of bishops who oversee the group, they make immediate reactive decisions and responses. They settle arbitrary disputes and squabbles. They serve as benevolence needs. Somebody in the congregation needs help. They are the ones, when the relief was sent to Judea, it was sent to the elders, who would apparently dispense it or disperse it in Judea. That's Acts the 11th chapter, verses 30, 31, 32. They serve as evangelism needs, requests. Somebody says, could you support some preacher maybe in some place in the Northeast? And they have to decide whether there are funds available and if this is the best use of those funds. They handle unexpected events in worship. Somebody pops up and starts making a commotion. Who's responsible for doing something about it? I think the elders. They need to make a move right quick and see to it that things are done decently in order. They're to take heed to the flock in order to set strategic decisions or directions. Get input from the congregation. I think that's so important. They don't have all the wisdom in the world. Many times there are people in the congregation that have a lot of wisdom. I mentioned last night, elders that actually go to a good Christian woman who may have some insights into some particular situation that can be helpful to them. They have to sense current and potential dangers. They have to look into the future and imagine events that might take place, changes in the demographics of the community that might affect the congregation, and whether we'd have need more additional building or whether we can start another congregation or something of the kind, and weigh the value of their and uses of the resources. They have to make and explain things to the congregation. And I don't think I'm going to read all of this, but in addition, they have a responsibility to provide spiritual food, select and guide the preacher, select and guide teachers and worship leaders, select topics and timing for the teaching, set guide objectives for the teacher. This is all a responsibility that they have. In addition to that, they have to provide exhortation and motivation to the congregation, express expectations and corrections, and to urge the church on to do work that needs to be done. They have to plan for special events. They need to provide for edifying worship in the congregation and set guidelines for the worship, who leads, and the order of the worship. I mentioned that earlier. They need to correct doctrinal error that may develop. Watch for trends and errors in the church and moral questions that need to be answered, or moral developments that need to be dealt with by preaching and teaching. They need to provide protective and preventive teaching and address specific false teachings and seek and accept suggestions and criticisms. All of that in relationship to the congregation. I think they can delegate some of this, but they have to see to it that's done. They are responsible. If there's a particular need for discussion, I recall one time the Islam influence was increasing. Well, none of us as elders or even the local preacher had made much of a study, but we knew a man who had. So we invited him in to come and work with the congregation on that particular question. And sometimes you're going to call men from outside. Sometimes you're going to select a man even within the church to help you with that. We're considering a change in our building. We need a little more space. And we can't very well build a new building. But we have one of the men in the church that's an engineer. Well, we have two or three that are engineers. And one has made some suggestions. And we found that we've got some architects in the church. And we have some interior designers in the church. And we have some builders in the church. Well, they know more about some of those things than the elders do. And wise elders are going to call on those in the congregation to help with whatever work needs to be done. And a group of elders will think they have all the wisdom in the world, and they're going to make all the plans in the world. I've known some preachers that way too. Elders that, you know, nobody else knows anything except what I know. It's going to be disastrous because in the congregation there are plenty of men that know more about some things than the elders do. And wise elders are going to call on them to utilize their expertise in those fields. But when we look at shepherds, what is the work of shepherds are responsible for each individual? Well, some of this overlaps, as we said. They address immediate problems between Christians. Christians get into a discussion, not a physical fight, hopefully, but can happen. What are the shepherds going to do about it? Just like two sheep get crossed up. Shepherds responsible for getting them separated, getting this stopped. If there are crises of faith and doctrine in an individual, If we know there's one that's having problems with some false teaching, we need to zero in on that person and help him. They need to watch for spiritual dangers in the... for spiritual dangers and opportunities to improve in each member. They need to provide teaching and counseling to encourage needed life changes, investigate the reasons and excuses they're giving for going astray, and provide warnings and advice to the individual. I remember one young lady I felt was a wonderfully fine Christian girl, but she just wasn't dressing very nicely. And I just said to her, I said, you're too good a girl to be dressing as provocatively as you are. I said, your skirt's just too short. Well, I knew the kind of person she was, and she said, oh, thank you, I'll not do that again. And she didn't. She was always very careful. She just hadn't thought. Now, I want to say that. I've gotten off the subject here. Sometime, I think, we have to determine what's needed first. Here's maybe a young lady whose dress is a little too short, but, boy, she got a lot more that maybe need attention than that. So we need to start where the need is greatest and move on. In that connection, I remember a young man that came in the congregation where we were, and he just looked so worldly. And everybody was looking at him. And I was, what are we going to do about that? Can do anything right now. He needs some understanding of what it means to be a Christian and the authority of the Scriptures. So little by little, he began to grow in his knowledge and faith, and things began to change in his appearance. I don't know if anybody ever mentioned it to him privately, but he grew and grew, and now he's one of our deacons, a fine father, wonderful wife. Just outstanding people. We have to decide what. It's like a fellow comes in that's got a sore finger, but he's also got heart trouble, and he's about to have a heart attack. What's the doctor? Well, we need to work on that finger. No, you don't. You need to get his heart straightened out first, and then deal with the finger. And that's sometimes. This is another one little side note. We have to determine what the person needs most. Deal with that. The particular young lady I was talking about a while ago, I knew was a faithful Christian and the one who wanted to be modest and pure, and she just hadn't thought, and so I could help her with her problem. But others I wouldn't approach on that basis at all. But if the elder, as a shepherd, it's his responsibility to be watching each sheep and know what each one really, really needs. Well, where did I get off on that? To organize spiritual support for weak members. Here's a weak member over here, and there's another one over there that can help him. Let's ask him to go over there and do what he probably can do more for that person than an elder can on a personal basis. Many times young people can help one another in a very special way. Provide opportunities for personal growth. What does that man need? And I think sometime in our eldership meeting, we would know that a person here has a lot of potential. What can we do? Let's give him some special jobs to do that will help him to use his potential and grow in his effectiveness. That's part of the work. We need to screen new members. I think we're here now. I don't believe, it used to be just anybody came up to the front and said, I want to place membership with this church. He said, well, great, we're glad. We've got a new member here, everybody. Who is this person? Is this person really a Christian? Has he obeyed the gospel? Is this person a troublemaker, someone for the congregation? How many times has this person been married? All these are things we need to know before we bring a person into the flock, and especially before we take responsibility for them. Hebrews 13 says that the elders are going to have to give an account for the members. And I remember one particular case where a person came and their marriage was just not scriptural. And we said, how can you defend it by the scripture? Well, I'm not sure we can defend it by the scripture, but we sure are happy, and God wants us to be happy. That's all we can say. I said, we can't be responsible for your soul. You're going to have to be responsible for it yourself and get yourself straightened out before we can accept responsibility. Because first thing we'd have to do is withdraw fellowship from you if we accepted you. So, no, we just can't accept you. I believe that's an important thing that elders are generally doing now that they didn't do for a long time. They need to be concerned for the sick. When somebody's sick, who did James say to call for? The elders of the church. They're the shepherds. They're concerned for the individual. They'd invite and lead congregational discipline. They're public to express disapproval of an individual's misbehavior. Sometimes that may come short of just disfellowshipping, but we just need the congregation to know we don't approve of this particular action. Maybe the person's going off to some other place. He's gone, but we want you to know that he left because he was being dealt with. We've done that on occasions. Because the elders didn't approve of what he was doing, he was dealing with it, and he chose to leave. But that needs to be known by the congregation. Prepare others for leadership and seek and accept suggestions and criticisms and pray for all. These are responsibilities of shepherds. You see the distinction I'm making? So many times the work of elders is thought to be nothing more than managing the church. Well, that's part of it. I really believe that. But taking an interest in each individual member is also part of the responsibility. And that's what many times is ignored. Now, this question that I said I had saved for this morning so we can have a little more discussion about it a little bit later. And I'll just say at the beginning, the Bible really doesn't say. It doesn't really say. And maybe one reason is to help us realize that there's just not any way that's absolutely acceptable or absolutely authorized or we could be satisfied with it. So what do we do? Well, I'm going to first of all suggest some unwise ways, I believe, of dealing with it. And the first is, and I've heard this again and again, well, just appoint the best men you have, whether they're qualified or not. But 1 Timothy 3:2 says, a bishop must be these things. Must be. Not can be, or should be, or be good if he were, but it says he must be. And the same thing in Titus, the first chapter, and verse 7. For a bishop must be certain things. So that doesn't seem to suggest the idea of appointing a man who is not what these verses say he must be. Well, somebody said, let's gather all the members and have them vote on every issue. I've been in recent discussion with a very fine man in another place who has been pushing for a vote on where the church should meet. That's really what the question is. And he's insisting that this needs to be settled by a vote. But the fact is that though this is the democratic way, and that's one of his arguments, there is no Bible record of a vote on anything. The only thing I could know that you might call for some Bible authority is drawing straws, casting lots. But I think that was a special set of circumstances that I wouldn't really advise. But voting, where do you read about a vote? In fact, most of the time, the minority were right and the majority were wrong in the scriptures. And though it's not democratic, we are not in a democracy. We're in a kingdom. And that's what we have to remember. Voting gives equal voice to the youngest and least experienced person. And he has an equal vote with the mature, those who are most mature and closer to be appointed elders. I think I messed that up somewhere or other, but maybe you can make heads and tails out of it. But anyway, that's the idea. And there's one outstanding illustration of this. If you have any older commentaries and books and sermons on, you're familiar with the name J.W. McGarty. He was one of the great preachers of the 19th century, great Bible scholars. He was strongly opposed to instrumental music. But in the church where he worshiped, they decided to have a vote as to whether they would incorporate instrumental music into the worship or not. And a brother that I knew was there. He's, of course, long gone now. But he observed the fact that J.W. Margari voted against it. And there was an 11-year-old boy nearby that voted for it. And that 11-year-old boy had as much voice in that decision as J.W. McGarvey, the great Bible scholar. It doesn't make sense. That's just not God's way. The more mature man should certainly have the greater voice in the matter. And we mentioned last night that having membership in the leadership of God's people without New Testament precedent, in fact, almost without Old Testament precedent. Someone might mention Deborah, the judge. I'll not preach my sermon on that, but she sat under her palm tree and people came and asked her questions. And when there was an army to be led, she sent for Balak. And instead of saying, "I'm telling you," she said, "Hasn't the Lord told you to go and lead this army?" And he said, "Well, I'll not go if you don't." "Well, she'll go." But there was no real push, no assertiveness of authority in her leadership of the people. And I've, as I said last night, I've known some wonderfully good women who were actually approached by elders to know their view of some passages of Scripture or their knowledge of certain individuals who needed attention. And that's altogether in order. But to have voice and leadership is just not God's plan. It's democratic, but it's not monarchical as far as the king is concerned. But there's another unwise way that I'll mention. That's the point of committee of men closest to being elders, which is almost the same thing as what we said a minute ago. This is tantamount to appointing them elders. If you're going to have a committee that does the work of elders, just call them elders. But this would not be acceptable. They're not qualified. How are you going to select who this committee will be? If they're not qualified, they shouldn't serve as elders, whether they're called elders or not. And such a committee makes it very difficult to appoint elders in the future. When you get a committee of men that are running the affairs of the church, and you want to appoint elders, they say, "Well, why? Don't you like what we're doing?" And they'll resist it because they don't want to be replaced in many cases. So there are problems with that. Well, what we're going to do, I think what we have to do is just come as close as we can to the New Testament plan without having any official leaders of the congregation. Since New Testament leadership was always male, I believe that male men should be the decision makers. That men should be the decision makers. But since elders are not to be novices, the voices of the more mature, experienced, and Christ-like men should be given extra weight. When you have a group of men together, and here are young men that have been, I think it's okay for them to be there and even express their view. But if there are more mature men in the church, in the group, it seems to me their voice should have greater weight. I'm not suggesting a vote, but I think younger men or less experienced men or newer converts just ought to have the kind of respect for good men who've been Christians longer, who may have some weaknesses that would not allow them to be elders, but you're going to listen to them with a little more respect. Since elders are not to be self-willed, and that's one of the things that's said about elders. And Peter says in 1 Peter 5 that they don't lord it over God's heritage. In other words, we're in charge here now, whether you like it or not. We're running this thing. That's the wrong attitude. And men that have that kind of attitude, in the first place, shouldn't need to be appointed elders. But neither should they be functioning in a group of men who just run over everybody's objections to do what they want to do. They're not, it's said in Philippians 2:4, that in the spirit of Christ, they do not look out for their own interests, but for the interests of others. These men, this men's meeting, ought to be concerned about the ladies and their needs. To set the worship service at 7 o'clock in the morning would be okay for a group of men, but I watched Marcy taking care of those three little ones, and it'd be hard for her to get here by 7 o'clock in the morning, I guarantee you. Well, we're the men. We're going to make them. No, wait a minute. You need to take in consideration everybody and their needs. What's going to work best for the group, not just on a personal basis. And that's the way it is with elders, for that matter. And that's the way it should be with such men. Such an arrangement provides experience for those who will someday be elders. I think it's good for the younger men to be in a group like that. But they're seeing the problems that have to be dealt with, how they're dealt with generally, and to the best degree of possible, respecting the leadership of those who are more mature. Also provides an opportunity to observe the conduct of men who will be considered for the eldership in the future. I've sometimes seen men misbehave so in a men's meeting that if elders were being appointed, I'd object. Because if they acted that way in a men's meeting, what are they going to do when they're elders? I think you can get some idea of what kind of leadership men are going to provide when they're part of a group like this, who are not elders, but are doing their best to accomplish this work that needs to be done, has to be done, without elders being appointed. Well, with or without elders, and I want to stress this, there's some individual responsibilities that we have. Let's look at these verses. Turn to Galatians 6, 1 and 2. In Galatians 6, verse 1, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, if you have a congregation with elders, whose first responsibility would it be? Here's a member of the church that's been overtaken in trespass. The elders need to know that. And they need to do something about it. But suppose you don't have elders. He says you that are spiritual. And that should be elders. But if you don't have elders, there are still spiritual people in the congregation. You that are spiritual, restore such an one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And even when you have elders, sometimes a mature Christian sees a fault in another person that the elders don't even know about. What should he do? Go to him and try to help him. Try to help him to correct the fault. And it may never even come to the elders. But if he won't correct it, you may take one or two others with you. And if he won't correct it, then you go to the elders for more dealing with it. And the elders, of course, to the church as a whole. But there's an individual responsibility. Now, but I don't want to get involved. That's the way elders feel many times. But we have a responsibility to one another. We are our brother's keeper. And whether I'm an elder or not, if I see someone that needs some correction, then let me offer it. I've had good women come to me and say, so I think you made a mistake when you did a certain thing. I'd like you to think about it carefully. Great. They haven't in any way overstepped their authority or their right. If they're spiritual people and they see a fault in me, let them come to me with that kind of spirit and attitude. It's not wrong. It's not wrong. It's good. It's good. Romans 15 and verse 14. That's the right verse. Doesn't seem right. I told somebody yesterday, the most biggest problem I'm having is, that's right. I wasn't sure. I'm confident, my brethren, concerning you, that you are also full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able to admonish one another. That could be translated, counsel one another. You're able to help one another. And he's talking to all the Christians there, not just elders. Whether you got elders or not, we can admonish, encourage, and strengthen one another. And then James, the 5th chapter, and verses 19 and 20. James 5, 19 and 20. Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death cover a multitude of sins. And that's being elder. Any Christian can assist with that. But I will mention this, that men who are practicing these things have already been looking out for one another are the very men who are going to be obvious choices for the eldership. This man has already been helping weak Christians. He's going to make a good elder. Not the only thing, but a man who hasn't been doing that most likely should not be appointed an elder. A man who doesn't love his brother enough to correct him when he's in error. You appoint him an elder and he's probably not going to do it either. Then either. There needs to be a love for one another that is one of the important qualifications. We're going to sing our song. We've left a few minutes here. And then we'll talk about some of these things. And sometime I'm just going to have to say I don't know. But we'll work on thinking together about some of these. Okay.